And you're back with the Geek Whisperers. This is Matt Brender.
And I'm John Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And we, despite John and Amy's best efforts, are going to dive into a different twist on our normal podcast. We like to talk about the theory, but I want to dig into the practice and talk about maybe tools of the trade.
I think we talk about practice a lot. I just didn't want to talk about tools because tools is easy, and I feel like so much of social media, podcasting, blah blah blah, get so fixated on, you know, here's what you do for Twitter, and here's when you should tweet, and they get so super specific and so super toolsy that people lose sight of why the heck you're doing all this. That's the only thing I had against tools. I think tools are fascinating. I think we're all, three of us are kind of geeks or nerds or whatever in the taxonomy of people who like gadgety things. I think all three of us are on that taxonomy. So go forth with the tools.
We're going to become the tools this week.
Well, Matt, then you're our chief tool. So
I'm our chief tool. Allow me to tool away here, team. But I really do, quick pitch on why tools are just a big part of my day-to-day. I'm always trying to find something new because I really think in the same way that this big data evolution is happening to us, big data isn't a new concept, but the interface onto it is improving. We now have a visually engaging and easy-to-process world when you have a good API and a UI driven by it. And that's the beauty behind Twitter, that it's actually a very robust API that is simply presented in a way that's very meaningful to people. And I love it. And then they give other people the opportunity to jump on that. So I'm going to go right into my favorite. Off the bat, I've been writing some blog posts about this, and it's Tweetbot. Tweetbot is my go-to on OS X, where I run most things, and then iPhone and iPad. They have an app for each, and it's just very pretty, intuitive, easy to manage, and a clean Twitter interface.
Now, why Tweetbot? Because I will admit that I used to be TweetDeck, and the one that starts with O, whose name escapes me, but I've given up. I've gone back to the native Twitter client. I figure if Twitter, who would disagree with you that they're just an API, because at this point they're a whole client experience. I don't think Twitter would disagree with you on the API thing. I think that they think of themselves as their own client. So I figure if they're going to force us all to use the Twitter client like we're geese and they're shoving a metal tube down our throats and filling us full of food so that our liver gets fatty, I figure I might as well be foie gras. So
we're foie gras Twitter.
I'm just using the native client in all aspects. So
I love it. Honestly, it's a really simple difference when between the native Twitter apps. Let's stick to iPhone for a second, which I think some absurd percentage of the world is using these days. When I'm playing with it on the iPhone using Tweetbot, they just take the best advantage of the swiping capabilities. So if I swipe to the left, I see a full conversation of a tweet in front of me. If I swipe to the right, I get some more details, a real easy kind of reply and retweet and follow the person interface. It's just very clean and simple. And I just find it's only one or two clicks to exactly what I'm looking for. You can just feel that everything was made with intention. And I'm such a sucker for a pretty UI. I think it's really pivotal today to work hard on that and make your users happy from the right off the bat.
So I am Tweetbot on the phone, TweetDeck on the laptop, and native client on the iPad. And I have three distinct clients on purpose because I started out just wanting to see the difference, but each one of them does something different for me. So I'm on a PC, so TweetDeck is still the best for me in terms of the columnar view, because I want to be able to see multiple things because I do a lot of events. I want to be able to use it really like a dashboard. On the phone, because again, I'm mobile doing what I do a lot, that I use the search capacity. I use search way more than I use lists, etc. And I've just found that Tweetbot does that most efficiently, including the left swipe for conversation and trying to find people I want, saving search strings, etc. It's just been a very efficient way for me to work. But when I'm at a show, I'm doing something that requires a lot of intense attention, I will often have my iPad and my phone out so I can watch a search string and tweet, which I do more efficiently from my phone in terms of the keyboard. And I actually like the native client on the iPad because it shows you things that you have to dig for a little bit in Tweetbot. But you can see retweets, you can engage with those people, decide if you want to follow them. It all pops up in the stream, and I really like that.
Oh,
that
totally true
feature.
Yeah,
that's the one enhancement request that's like right on top of my head. I'm sorry, John. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just gonna say I like the native client for a couple of reasons. I like it because on the Connect tab, I get to see retweets, I get to see favorites, and then I also get to see who's followed me. And it used to not. I used to have a hard time following people back because I just didn't give a crap. But now, since it's right there in my stream, I have a tendency to look through it and see if are you a human being and are you in IT or are you in social media and you're not a scary spammer. I will follow you back. The bar for social media is much higher than the bar for IT, by the way. And then if you're a company or somebody just trying to get me to look at your account, I don't follow you back. So I actually follow many more people because of the native client. And then I also on my Mac, I kind of like the Discover tab. It's not as good as Flipboard or Prismatic or some things like that, but it's right there, and it shows me things that people are tweeting, and I kind of like that too.
Oh, good point. And actually, that's what – you just reminded me of a tab on Tweetbot that really makes my day, and that's the mute filters. Is there a native – or is there mute filters on the native app for Twitter?
I don't think so.
Not easy. No, I think Tweetbot does that more elegantly.
Oh man,
as well,
so you can mute things by keyword, by hashtag, by client, or by people, and you can do it for an hour, a day, a month, whatever you want, forever. And I just it really removes a lot of the like well meant but spammy spam that people throw out there sometimes.
Mm.
I've read enough paper leaves to last a lifetime, so I just have those filtered right out. And other things like that. Just it really cleans up the old timeline.
See, you guys are much bigger power users than I am at this point because I used to set up save searches and filters and stuff like that, but I've just given up. Just give me the raw stream and I'll dip into it. Part of it is because I've been in this industry long enough and around so many technology cycles that I know if I customize the crap out of something, they'll just take it away from me. So why bother? So I don't customize anything. I used to customize – well, see, this. I had X Windows in grad school, right? And I customized it so that the scroll bars were on the left the way they should be because I'm left-handed. And I customized the crap out of all that. My .x Windows file, whatever, was awesome. And my Emacs file, .emacs file, was awesome. And my shell RC was awesome. I spent many months in grad school customizing my environment instead of getting my my degree done. After, you know, you do that a couple times and have to move to a new platform, I don't care anymore. I don't customize a damn thing.
And that's honestly, that makes a lot of sense. It's a good lessons learned where the more you're automating, the more you're relying on a given platform that is susceptible to change at the will of something that's beyond your control. It really does make sense to just deal with the native experience as much as you can. So I actually, while you say you're being curmudgeon-y, I actually admire you for, I think you're more of a power user by just being able to absorb the raw stream and just make it work.
I suspect, for instance, that Amy, you're probably you probably have a really organized filing cabinet at home. Yes, no?
See, here's my deep dark secret. Thank you for calling me out. I am a filing machine when it comes to digital. And in my real life, paper, things that are paper, if I could never bring another piece of paper into my home or life again, I would avoid it because I'm the worst. I let it stack up. I deal with it. I shred it. I want to get rid of it. I wish I had that organized file cabinet, but digitally, I am organizing machine. And paper-wise, it's not good.
Gotcha,
it's
not gotcha. Brilliant, though. You're compensating for the physical ineptitude that you have by going all digital.
Ineptitude.
And ineptitude is absolutely the right word. Like, I blame being left-handed. But I think John is too, so I can't really get out of this.
Interesting. I don't file a damn thing, so...
You're reminding me of
okay,
how strong
Oh, good. I do blame left-handed.
Yeah. All right, so we definitely played with the Twitter clients. Any big notes on Twitter clients before we go to other things?
Wait, one other thing.
Yeah.
One other thing, because I think we can't not talk about Hootsuite, because I know I haven't used Hootsuite professionally in quite a while. I did use it for a while.
Oh, you're right.
I've used EchoPhone as well. I know people who use EchoPhone and like it. I found it too buggy. It crashed a lot on me. That's just me personally. for Hootsuite, the professional installation of it, I have heard teams using it quite effectively when you've got multiple logins, because they need organized search streams. They need to share and you know, multiple DJs on a single handle. And also because you can use it as a content management system as far as Twitter goes. So you can use it as for scheduled tweets, et cetera. So I know a lot of people are using that successfully. And if you've got a team environment for the other social media professionals out there who are looking for that kind of low cost, low lift, high impact, would definitely recommend checking out Hootsuite for your needs if you didn't have a budget that scaled to do some Sprinklr or, you know, high end tool.
Yeah, we actually use Hootsuite at VMware. We're moving off of it. We think we've outgrown it, but it's especially effective for teams. It has assignment capabilities, so we use that for some of our incoming support related tweets. We use that pretty effectively. And then the other thing it does is it mediates access to the account by hiding the password. So if someone leaves the company, you can remove them from Hootsuite, and you do not have to change the Twitter password if you're handing out Twitter passwords. So that's kind of a hygiene security thing, that compliance thing that you should have. You should never be handing out raw account passwords to your team. That's very dangerous. It's also very clunky if you have to change them and notify everybody. So having a layer that mediates access to your social accounts is...
That's a really...
Yeah, yeah, John, you said that on another episode, that there's no big red button for your social accounts, and especially as we see some great examples of when people forget to do that, and, you know, like the live stream of people getting fired.
Yep.
yes. Yeah, you got to watch out for those things. I do want to give another plug for Hootsuite. Absolutely great. I use it mostly around events when I know that there are announcements happening at given times, and the fact that they let you schedule for free at a given time and a given tweet is very handy for me. When I want to just kind of churn out information, I'm using Buffer, the Buffer app, which just lets you basically put things into a quote-unquote buffer, and it tweets it out at an optimal time based off your following and your time zone, which is really wonderful. I've seen increased engagement because of it, and they give you the analytics bit based on it too, so that's really handy.
Hey, but is there a tool... Somebody was asking me about this at dinner the other day. Is there a tool they had a stream of curated tweets, and they're using Buffer. So these are things I find interesting. But they actually wanted everything to go out twice a day for the European crowd. Is there any tool that automatically would do that?
That hurts my head as a strategy. But given that exception,
don't judge, don't be a hater. You know, I don't do it, but some people do.
No, I think you can do some of that in Hootsuite, can't you? Because I'm thinking, I know Tumblr gives you the option of auto-tweeting out the link to your Tumblr blog, you know, for that reason.
With something like Hootsuite, you can always schedule things twice, and it may even be on.
Right.
And they also have an auto-scheduler, too, like Buffer. So I think all the other low-cost ones have either gone away or become high-cost. I think there's some startups, though, but I don't know. Hootsuite's certainly the leader.
And I bet you could make a pretty recipe in If Then Then That. That might be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And just for more context for those less familiar with it, ifttt.com, a really cool API-driven tool that lets you script a lot of different social properties. So say you do something, like you save a note in Evernote and it has this keyword, you can auto-tweet that. Or you do something on Twitter and it publishes it saves a file here or there.
It actually can't anymore. Twitter made them take away... the triggers based on Twitter, I think. Yeah?
Really? Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah,
that shows that, my recipe isn't working anymore. That makes me sad.
No, we live in a horrible age of corporatism where Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everybody fights and everybody makes things worse for humans.
Thank you for that uplifting.
Yeah, I feel very inspired to go start an alternative. No, it's still showing my tweets.
Okay, well, maybe I'm wrong. They took away some recipes, so.
Okay. Yeah, I just logged in. I still, if I share a recipe, yeah, it does auto-tweet it.
No, it tweets stuff out, but you can't have Twitter coming in. Like, I used to have one that every time I favorited a tweet, it would put it on my WordPress blog, but it doesn't do that anymore.
Evil. Yeah, so there definitely are some paying attention to inbound versus outbound. But the fact that you can plug into everything from Pocket to the soon-to-be artist formerly known as Google Reader to Facebook, to even your email if you want to OAuth into your email, which I find a little bit too awkward from a permission standpoint. But you can do that. I have a text every morning that just tells me the weather because I couldn't be bothered with weather apps. I'd rather just get a quick text that tells me the temperature.
See, now, if I was in grad school, I would have spent all my time scripting all this stuff. And I would have, you know, with a script, you know, navigated the authentication mechanisms for all this stuff. And I wouldn't have seen the need for this. But actually, IFTTT is awesome.
Yes.
It's pre-negotiated, all that stuff.
And also talk about, again, me being a fanboy of pretty interfaces. It could not be any easier to navigate. It just says if this, then that, and you click on the this, and then you click on the that. And it gives you all these pre-described little things that you can put together. It's very pretty. But anyway, I don't need to dig any further into that. Let's talk about things that are non-Twitter related. Amy, I know you're our social giant for Facebook. Is there anything you do related to either posts or to pictures? I know you're a big picture taker.
Yes. So I have a couple of thoughts about that in terms of Facebook. Well, three. So number one, if you do batch uploads, which I really recommend you find a helper app to do because nothing does it elegantly. And if you do the single thing, it is beyond irritating. So if you're taking a batch of photos from a mobile device up into Facebook, I really like iLoader. So iLoader allows you to create a new folder. It allows you to put it in folders that already exist. It allows you to tag it. It allows you to group it. It allows you a lot of control. And I actually went ahead and bought iLoader Pro. The advantage of that is if you manage pages that aren't just your personal account, you can batch upload into a page as well, which is not a feature that you've got in the unpaid version. It's fairly inexpensive and really, really like it. It's a great way to declutter your stream and to get everything up and organized right away. Because it's one of those things, again, we're talking about how neat you keep your digital files. If you've got tools that allow you to do it right away, we all know if you put it off, it will be in a box in your basement for the rest of its life. And your wedding photos, for instance, will never make it into an album. And that's kind of the show equivalent. If I don't do it within 24 to 48 hours, it does not get done. So it's really important to have some simplification. So love iLoader for that. The other two things to talk about there is if you're not on Instagram and you should be, because that one is a great tool.
Step one.
It's not just about the filters. Step one, you should be. It is not just a way to filter. It is a way to, it's a content distribution system, and pictures are important content. It allows you to send to multiple avenues of cloning essentially at the same time with a single touch. And I cannot recommend it highly enough. So you can put things into Facebook. Now, it's a little clumsy when you get there because they don't let you drag and drop those easily into albums. And sometimes I have to include those in the batch upload to put them where I want them. So it's a little bit clumsy there. But for the immediate, you know, you've got a single picture, you want to distribute it into a broad stream, highly recommended. And the last thing is for pictures that you're not sure of yet, you don't want to distribute widely, but you want to filter, improve, save them for a blog post, etc., want them to look pretty. I have a free app called Aviary, and there's lots of different apps you can use to do this, but it allows you to filter your pictures simply, greatly improve them, change lighting, contrast, you know, they can auto filter. It's similar to what you do in Instagram. You can choose to use Aviary to distribute it to all these things, including into Instagram, but you can also just choose to save the file back to your device, which is, again, helpful if you want to save a picture that's quite special, for instance, and save it for a big blog post, and you don't want to just drip it out, stream it out. Those are my three thoughts about how to organize your image life, make them look better, and distribute them where you want them.
That's perfect. Wow. Really good feedback, and there's a lot to know there, so we'll link to all of this in the blog. John, I mean, tell us a couple of your go-tos. And I mean, there must be something that you use to keep your digital life all organized. Do you have any favorites?
Well, right now, text edit works well. I'm telling you, man, I'm an old school Unix geek. But right now I'm using Evernote. That's working for me. I don't think I'm an Evernote power user, but I do try to dump. I'm just starting to start web clipping things in there because I got the professional version because I needed to buy the professional version because I needed local files on my iPad while I was on a plane. So I'm into them for $50. A year, I guess. But I really like it. I've started to use the web clipping thing more. I do a lot of notes. I'm figuring out. It is one of those things where it is kind of formless until you figure it out. It turns out that you really need to do hierarchies of notebooks to make it effective. And, you know, it has tags. It has all this sort of crap you can do. But I just mainly use it for to-do lists.
Yeah, that's great. I've been a big fan of it for a year plus now, and I've moved away from all those different digital kind of gopher holes you can leave yourself, where you're like, you have a few files you shove in this folder, and there's a few out on that drive.
Yeah, is it on Dropbox? Is it on Google Drive? Is it on my corporate thing? Did I leave it on a USB key somewhere?
Yeah, one of the seven on my desk, and you take turns plugging them in. So instead of that, I always just kind of I put it in Evernote first, and it's been really nice. I also pay for it, and I've gotten recently into using tags, and that's really the lifesaver. So I have like one notebook I call Scribbles, which is just immediate thoughts off the top of my head, and then everything else I just tag. And when I do really want to sector things off, like I have some hacking sort of code details that I want to keep on hand, put that into a separate notebook stack and a few things like that. And I've started sharing files from there. So actually I share something with my girlfriend who I live with so that we can keep track of our expenses and some other things like write in Evernote. And that's been really helpful too. So a good platform to work collaboratively as well.
Yeah, I have a notebook I share with a coworker, actually, and that's working out pretty well, too.
Nice. Speaking of coworkers and trying to share collaboratively, I have to bring up, honestly, if I had to burn all of my other accounts and just stop using everything, the one thing I'd want to hold on to these days is Asana. And it's a freemium application. I'm using the free version, which is it's just a project management software designed to really let you run whatever kind of program you're doing. It's rather extensible and simple to start, but I use it as different lists, and they have due dates, and you can assign them to people if you're working with coworkers. You can tag them. You can make subtracts. It's just really clean, cool, and extensible.
Hmm. Have you ever tried Trello?
No, but I've heard a good bit about it. Are you a user?
I've used it for some things. It's more of a Kanban card system, so it's less. It has an interface that appeals to people. It's maybe people who are stackers rather than pilers rather than filers.
Yeah, this is something where like you can use it everything from like a content management system to just a project tracker to something that you're using for like agile development sprints. Like it's really as flexible as you want it to be. And they give you really nice like tutorial videos to give you ideas of how to use it. And then they're always asking for feedback. Like, how are you using it? Because maybe we can make something even better for you. So it's very cool. Like community driven development and it looks pretty and it works really well on the iPad natively, which is handy.
Nice. I'll put a plug in for our VMware's tool inside SocialCast. They've got a project tool that actually works pretty well.
Oh, no way. I should definitely know that.
Well, I mean, SocialCast is only internal facing, so it's definitely a work kind of thing. So, yeah, it's kind of a side thing that they stuck onto the collaboration tool. But again, it's pretty lightweight. I like lightweight tools. I think the age of Microsoft Project, unless you're like a full blown project manager.
Yeah, I think,
I mean, that's what we used to have, man. We used to have to fire up, you'd fire up Microsoft Project and do a Gantt chart for your stupid little two-person project. It was kind of dumb and hard to use.
Yeah.
And non-interactive and non-social and not online.
It was terrible. Thank goodness that time is dead.
Well, that's one of the things that's interesting to me is that as we talk about these, some of them are individual personal tools that we're using to keep ourselves organized. But I love that there's a lot of crossover, and more than one of the tool sets we've mentioned is good for group projects. And I think it is interesting in what we do. As much as it is individual lift, like we've talked about, nobody's going it alone. And so much of what we do ends up crossing over. And if you do this on social, it's extra important to be a bit organized, because otherwise you end up with way too many cooks in the Twitter kitchen.
Oh, what a great point. What you're reminding me of as I look through the list of the things we talked about, it's a lot of things that they've made it really easy to share are and really easy to follow back on. Like in the same way John was talking about how he sees who followed him in his stream, so it's just easy to respond. And anything that makes it easier for us to interact with people is going to be at an extremely high need for how fast and how much we try to consume daily.
Yeah. I think the bar's definitely been raised. One thing I'm disappointed with is I always thought that there would be a little, I think they used to call them, people have had different words for these. One word is like situational apps or ad hoc apps. As business users, we often have a need for tiny apps to take care of something or to record something. And a lot of startups have made tools like this, and they've all gone out of business because it turns out it's a very hard market to attack. My coworker keeps wanting to use FileMaker Pro for all this, but that's the kind of, we tell her, no, you can't use FileMaker Pro. But, so you end up using a spreadsheet for all these kind of little mini database apps, which is a shame because a spreadsheet is the wrong tool for almost anything except a spreadsheet. And so I used to use Zoho. I've used Zoho for a few things. I actually end up using Google Forms for a lot of my stuff. That's my secret weapon. I don't know if I'm always in corporate compliance, but that's what I do.
I don't want to air too much of our dirty laundry, but anyone that's applied to be an EMC Elect member has seen more than a few Google Form iterations that I've gone through. And actually, the fact that they have a JavaScript interface to scripting them and doing cool things with them so that you can connect forms together and send data to different places. It's just so extensible and very free that I can't help but want to keep using it.
Also, Matt, can you imagine putting in an IT request to build you an app to do that?
I can, actually. I did. I'll get it in a couple years.
Yeah, exactly. So these kind of lightweight tools, I think, become more and more important. But I don't think there's a great solution yet. I mean, because Google Forms is good for that. For who wants to sign up to bring salad to the potluck? But not much beyond that.
Totally true.
Oh, hey, I have a tool too.
Oh, go for it.
My other tool that we use for this podcast that I'll recommend for everybody is the Levelator. It's a dead tool. Come on, because I'm a digital archaeologist. It's a dead tool. It's no longer maintained, but it works great.
Oh, so, it's incredible. Yeah, I have to second that. And so what's it do, John?
Well, it was created by the Conversation Network, which was a podcast, five years ago, 10 years ago. I'd have to go look. It auto levels conversational audio streams. So when you have people on the phone or on Skype and people have different levels and are at different volumes and we're not mic trained and occasionally we'll lean back in our chair and we'll be shouting across the room at our mic and we'll get softer, it basically puts a waveform there. It probably does some sort of Fourier transform. Anyway, it picks up it makes you all sound loud. It's an audio compressor basically, but it's dynamic. So it makes everybody sound the same loudness. And podcasts, when I don't do it on my work podcast and here – here we've always done it, but on the work podcast, if I don't put it through the audio processor, everybody complains at me. I can't listen to this in my car. It's too soft. It's too the volume goes up and down. It's too noisy. But every time I do it, people like it. So I'm a big believer.
Brilliant. Yeah, I have to second it. It's been really handy. I tried to do it by hand at first until you introduced me to Levelator, and then I'm just like, this is exactly what I needed. So
thank you
for your archaeological contribution.
You're welcome. It's no longer maintained. I don't know. I assume one could do it in GarageBand or Audacity or something for some plugin, but I've never found anything else. So it's I'm going to keep it in my kit till I can't use it anymore.
Amen. Makes sense to me. Well, that's quite a heavy list. That's quite a heavy list of different tools. I guess there's one more that I'd love to hear how each of us deal with. Again, in the wake of Google Reader, we all try to keep up with our RSS feeds through some medium or another. I just love a quick around the circle of what tools people are using lately for that.
I don't use RSS feeds.
Oh my! I know, guilty admission. Like,
holy crap!
It threads in through. I've got a WordPress app on my phone because I have a WordPress blog, and so I for my food blog side, I go look through that. And the other, my Twitter is my RSS feed.
Yep. I do have a few other information discovery tools, but anyway, go on with Twitter, Amy.
No, you just took all the wind out of my sails.
Well, no. So here's the problem. There is an important ecosystem of information producers and curators and consumers. There are so many information curators that we follow on Twitter. We no longer need to be curated. We curate their curated streams, right? And every time I've used RSS readers, I've subscribed to too many things, and it's depressing because I can't keep up. So this Twitter situation where people just tweet good stuff at us is a much better solution. But now that doesn't mean the world cannot live without curators, right? If all the curators go away, and that's what's going to, you know, we're taping this before Google Reader goes away. So I don't know when we're going to show it. If all the curators go away, it'll be like all the pandas going away, and the world will be a sad place.
And the pandas will be sad before they go away.
Exactly.
Sad panda world. No, you're right. I guess that hit me in the gut at first, and then I realized that, honestly, the things I pay the most attention to are what's immediately in front of me sometimes in the Twitter timeline. It works well. It makes life easier. And it also, things keep popping up as people amplify, as people retweet. And I trust my network. If I see something retweeted a couple times with people, I know I need to make time to read it.
Yeah. I do use lots of tools, though. So I love Flipboard for that.
Sure.
And I'm using Prismatic right now. And I am using Quib. And let's see, that's an email subscription. And there's a couple of others. So they come and go. I was using Undrip, but it just pivoted. So they come and go. I don't think we have the best information discovery tool in the world yet. So I think there's probably a couple of more iterations of hackers to build startups that will then go out of business until we figure it out. I use the Twitter Discover tab too. So I use all those to find good links.
Yeah, and I've been heavily reliant on Feedler, especially since they made it easy to jump from Google Reader over to Feedler. It's just a pretty multi-platform, consistent RSS feed. And I use it only for essentials. I try to really scale back so I don't get that RSS depression that John was talking about, where you just feel like, oh, I've got 8,000 things to read, so I might as well not read any of it. Just really focusing on those people that if I miss it, I feel like I'm missing out on the pulse. And then everything else, just let the serendipity of Twitter do its thing.
Are you guys familiar with Metafilter?
No.
Yeah, see, I'm older than you. Metafilter is an awesome site. It has been around for a long time, probably since pre-2000. It is a community weblog was how it started. And it is a community of people who contribute interesting things. And there's a linky site. And it's not techie, it's everything. So there's a regular site where people link to interesting things. When you can't submit your own things, the only things that are interesting. And it's not one link. You write a little mini essay. So it's not like Reddit. It's kind of the anti-Reddit. The discussion threads are flat. But you find very cool things on Metafilter.com. And then they have one called AskMetafilter.com, which is like as if Yahoo Answers was the evil Spock, the evil universe for Star Trek, this is the good universe where actually questions actually get answered by intelligent human beings. So I find Metafilter a very valuable way of finding cool things. Occasionally, I will tweet them.
What a great point. And yeah, actually thinking about it, like there's a lot of web apps I rely on for web apps, web platforms. Metafilter, now that you mention it, yeah, I've Googled my way to there many a time.
Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful
content.
Unlike Flipboard.
Feedly. Yeah.
Well, or Flipboard or all these things which just shove links at you. Maybe they come from your community. They come from your Twitter people, but it just curates all the links and shoves them at you and makes them pretty. Metafilter is an actual community with actual real people. So it's a whole other thing. It's an awesome group of people that have – and so it's a different thing. It's something that you miss with some of the new style stuff.
Oh, I love it. And actually, there is a new stylish version of that you just reminded me of, the Stack Exchange Network. It's a collection of gamified communities that are free to entry and are really Q&A-based rating systems that are absolutely wonderful. Stack Overflow is the most famous. It's for programmers. Yeah. But there's one that I use a lot called Super User, where a lot of people have helped me solve computer problems at home on there. But they even have some nerdier ones, or like niche nerdy ones, like English grammar people and food people that are answering questions for each other. So they've gamified and extended out all these different platforms in a way that's like tipping its hat to Metafilter.
Well, yeah, they're a couple generations past that. At one point, I thought all forums were going to go to the Q&A style. It turns out it's kind of hard to do this moderated Q&A because you have to have a what is the objective answer. They have very strict rules about is there objective truth here. So that kind of style works for things that have answers, so questions that have answers. And server fault is the one for system administrators.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
And Stack Overflow for programmers. And they have, but then when they had to extend to other topic areas like moms, you have a very hard time because, like, what is the best baby stroller does not have an objective answer. So they kind of had to change some of their moderation standards to figure that out. And it's also not a place where you can have a discussion because they really want to keep you to questions and answers. So it is an interesting computer-mediated communication study in that it's very good for Q&A but not very good for answers and also not very good for links probably.
Huh. Yeah, no, very good
news.
Point.
It's not a news site or anything like that.
Oh, by no means. Definitely yeah. Not.
Do any of you go to Quora?
Nope.
No.
Couldn't pay me.
Yeah, okay, let's just skip it then.
I try to play on Reddit here and there. Still, honestly, intimidated a little by that community just because it is such a... it's as vibrant as it is violent.
Yeah. It used to be good in the old days.
Oh, well... when it comes to news, hit that. But mostly, honestly, we're all going to be Twitterati here.
Yep. That's where I get my cat pictures.
Absolutely. Mostly of my cat and unicorn horns these days. If you have not seen that, I'm going to tweet that to you right now.
What? And so that was one of those. Did the cat kill you afterwards? Did she murder you in your sleep?
She sure looked like she was ready to, but as soon as I took it off her head, she went back down to the non-rage cage kitten that she is.
That's mean. You should put those on dogs, not cats. It's too mean for cats.
That's like great.
People who dress so up their cats, it's bad.
The moment was right.
That's awesome. And you documented it, which was the most important thing.
Yeah, because it's never happening again. Well, hey, we really hit a lot of great topics from how to be more of a Twitter super user to how to get your pictures out there as easily as possible to a bunch of other tools that we'll have lots of links to because this is going to teach the world how to go fishing for themselves on social platforms. So with that, thank you, John. Thank you, Amy. Another great episode of the Geek Whispers.
Booyah. You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week. I think three of us are kind of geeks or nerds or whatever type, whatever in the taxonomy of people who like gadgety things.